WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Allison Stewart. There's no question that the school year is off to a bumpy start. From the delayed classes to technical glitches, the level of frustration is high. And while some issues are unique this year, other challenges are persistent problems people have faced for years. Joining me now is someone who's seen what's going on in the city's public schools from several different angles. Jose Vilson left the New York City public school system over the summer, where he taught middle school math in the Inwood, Washington Heights area for 15 years. He's now pursuing his doctorate in education and overseeing his son's online school day. He's an activist, a 2013 Aspen Ideas Scholar, and the author of the book, This Is Not a Test. Jose, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
And listeners, we want you to be part of this conversation. Parents, teachers, principals, school administrators, we want to hear from you. What are you struggling with now that school has started? Is there anything you wish you had heard from your child's school or the Department of Education that would have helped as the school year got underway? Are there issues that you're facing unique to this year, or are they challenges you faced before exacerbated by this moment? Give us a call at 646-435-7280. That's 646-435-7280. Or you can share your thoughts with us on Twitter or Instagram, where our handle is @allofit. Jose, I mentioned that you left the school system over the summer. I'm wondering, how big a part did the pandemic and the uncertainty over what school would look like in the fall play into that decision?
Well, I think it played, I would say a quarter of it came because of the pandemic. I got to tell you, it was really stressful trying to teach from March through June, being not just a teacher for about 140 students, but then also trying to navigate being a parent at the same time. So in the way that I noticed that trying to pursue a doctoral program at Teachers College at Columbia University, and then on top of that, trying to teach full time. On top of that, trying to be a fully engaged parent for an eight-year-old. I felt that was a little too much. So, and to do this in the middle of a pandemic felt like a lot, and it didn't feel like the same sort of teaching that I had been doing for 15 years. So, when you look at that in sum, I would say that COVID definitely had a role to play in me pursuing a different route.
Wow, and that's a huge lift, and you have the training in teaching, and we know a lot of parents don't have that background. I want to go a little bit deeper on your experience last spring when you were teaching remotely. What was that like? How did you sort of wrap your head around it to start? How did you get it up and get going, and what do you feel like you learned from it?
I think what people need to recognize, too, for somebody who has taught in Inwood, Washington Heights for 15 years, is that whenever it came to any number of emergencies, I was always available. When we had a transit strike, for example, I went to go sleep in my cousin's apartment during that transit strike just so I could make it to school. When there were snowstorms, I was among the first to show up. Even when there were other teachers who were in New Jersey, I said I needed to show up because my students needed me. I found myself fairly involved with the parents, and I have seen over 1,000+ parents. So in that context, right, like I noticed that this was an emergency. And so I felt like I needed to step up regardless of what the science said, regardless of what anybody else said. I said, I need to do what I need to do because my students need me at this moment in time. So with that context, it was super difficult because, you know, there's a difference between trying to teach face-to-face versus trying to teach rectangles, which I always tell people. It's like, it just felt like a bunch of rectangles in front of me. And then furthermore, not having, you know, guidance necessarily from Central DOE about how these things were supposed to go, I found myself trying to be a little bit more innovative. So I guess that was the good part in that, like, I went from trying to teach 30 students all at once in the Zoom to being more innovative, creating the small groups, individual one-to-one appointments, being flexible about my schedule throughout the day so that I could try to reach all 140 students, not in the way that I would on the face-to-face basis, but at the very least so that they can all get some form of learning during that period. But needless to say, that was a difficult transition for the first couple of weeks until we finally got that together.
Listeners, we want you to join this conversation with Jose Vilson, a education activist and former math teacher in the New York City schools. We want to know, what are your struggles now that school has started, and what do you feel like you need to help make the year go by better? Give us a call at 646-435-7280. That's 646-435-7280. Or you can share your thoughts with us on Twitter or Instagram. Our handle's at @allofitwnyc. And I want to go to our first caller. It's a Crystal, a parent from Brooklyn, who... Crystal, can you hear me? Make sure Crystal is there. Crystal, welcome to WNYC. Oh, I don't think you can hear me, Crystal. Well, we're going to pause for a minute. We'll go back to Jose. Jose, as an advocate, what are some of your biggest concerns about remote learning? You've described all the different ways that as a teacher, you are there to support your students at times of emergency. How is that hampered in this new environment?
Well, we recognize that, I mean, among the plethora of issues, we notice that schools are the longest and most enduring social safety net in this country for our kids. So the students who were getting food security and health security handled by schools no longer feel like they have that option, or if they do, they feel like they're getting it in spurts. And so it's incumbent upon us to continue to pursue options where we can have those regional centers open, making sure that our schools, regardless of whether or not they're going to be hybrid, can still continue to, you know, prefer those options for the students who really need it. We shouldn't have a society that we, you know, that makes sure that, like, you have to be matriculated in order for you to get health insurance and, you know, food security on some level. But unfortunately, that's what we have right now. But, you know, as a classroom teacher, I also recognize that unlike when students had to show up face-to-face and they were getting their attendance checked, this is sort of different. You now have a situation where any number of issues could happen in the home. So it isn't just that they're not showing up because they don't want to. Some of them are just not showing up because, you know, their Wi-Fi may not be as strong if they have any Wi-Fi at all. They may have to share their Wi-Fi with any number of students as well as, you know, adults who are also trying to work from home as well. You have any number of situations where, you know, especially for my students, a lot of their parents were essential workers. So we recognize the struggles there and how many of my students actually lost a parent or a family member due to COVID because they also were essential workers. And so there's just all these different levels that I don't think we fully address, or at least have a strong narrative for how schools were going to support our students in this way. And so when I would get on camera, my first inclination was always to ask my students how they were doing, how they were feeling. And even when I would call parents during that era, I found myself leaning more into that social-emotional part for the parent as much as I would for the child, whereas prior it may have been half academic, half social-emotional. Now it felt more like 80-20 because the insecurity felt so strong for so many of the parents who I serve.
Talking about parents, we want to bring, I think we do have Crystal from Brooklyn on the line now. Crystal, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for joining us on All of It.
Thank you for having me on. You guys have been very helpful, as you know, a lot of parents have to just have their NPR in the background to hear if there's been any updates that upend the whole schedule. it's been really tough, I think, especially for a lot of mothers that are shouldering everything, just trying to work from home and teach is, or help people get onto Zooms is impossible. And it's really hard to teach a 9-year-old to copy a link into a space bar. And if one thing goes wrong in their remote class, you have to start over. And you have to get up from your computer and go and help them. And it's a trying time for everyone.
Crystal, for people who aren't in the situation that you're facing, can you just give us sort of a quick sort of snapshot of what your morning looks like? How do you kind of get things going?
Try and get everybody out really early to just exercise before any morning calls start. And then we, school starts at about 8:50. I kind of prepare breakfast, put them in front of their laptops, sit on one side of the dining room table and get them started, and then start my day. We keep going like that, switching back and forth. And then closer to the afternoon, kind of just letting the day fall apart. So getting down into work, actually, and having to let them kind of steer themselves into things that are fun and educational and safe.
And I hear you say them, so it sounds like you have more than one student that you're helping through this process.
Yes, two.
Okay.
And the DOE, like, they've sent the wrong remote workbooks for the whole school, has the grade before. So they don't even have the materials that they need. And you find this out basically from group chats or NPR or parents or an email alert. And that's not conducive to planning.
Well, Crystal, thank you so much for calling WNYC, and we are pulling for you. Jose, when you hear that, I wonder how much you had hoped that administrators would have learned from the experience last year to improve the start of the school year, because it sounds like there's still a whole lot of bumps.
I think there's just, obviously, we know that there's way too many bumps. I think, we also recognize, too, that too much of what the political battles have been between the mayor and the governor, for example, have put parents, students, and educators in the middle of the pettiness that has happened. And so the lack of clarity is really an indictment of said battles, instead of us trying to think forward about the ways that we can actually make school work for children and make it work for parents, which obviously was a problem even before the pandemic, but has been exacerbated by what's been going on now. We think about how many teachers I know currently, for example, who are holding maybe 50 students in a Zoom call. And are like, our class sizes have exploded because everyone thinks that it's so much easier for us to teach digitally, where I find it exponentially harder. And then on some other levels, too, we also recognize that parents feel that stress, because all of a sudden they have to do something that they're not necessarily, they don't feel qualified to do it, right? Like, we haven't had the conversation as a country about the difference between schooling and education and what kids are actually learning and what they're not. And so when we don't have those conversations from a structural and a systematic level, then you have all these different conflicts happening, including the lack of scheduling and consistent scheduling that needs to happen to ensure that every kid can learn. Unfortunately, we have too many people who just don't know what's going to happen next because we haven't had a clear plan, and we had all summer to figure that out. But unfortunately, that didn't happen because we didn't put teachers at the core. And I'm not talking about just like the teacher unions versus everybody else, or administrative unions versus everybody else. It's like, no, actually have, school-based teachers, rank and file teachers, actually have an opinion about how their experiences have gone, and then be able to provide concrete feedback loops to ensure that we can actually make, that we can actually serve kids. Because I think the vast majority of teachers who I know may not have a very positive experience about what's going on right now, but they want to make it work. And the only way they can make it work is that they have that voice, that they're allowed to have that voice, and not just from a political standpoint, but from an academic and a professional standpoint.
I want to bring in another listener who called us. This is Raymond in the Bronx. Ray, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, how you doing? Greetings to everyone. I'm so glad that you're speaking on this topic because I'm at work right now, but I took the time out because my wife is at home with my children, and I see the frustration and the, I'm sorry for the background noise. But the thing that's so frustrating for us, first of all, two children right now, and the other thing is that they totally changed the way the curriculum was going during the pandemic. It's a totally different thing. They used to use Zern and different programs, and now it's something else. And as the guest was saying about over the summer preparation, it seems to me, because I work in technology, it just seems to me like they thought it was going to blow over because they had the summer to increase bandwidth in the schools. All the schools are a different age, and it has a really tremendous effect on parents. Like how you said, in the groups, they're talking amongst themselves, and they're like, you know, they don't know what's going on, and there's no real sense of any type of direction. And my wife feels like she's changed to the laptop, and so are the kids. For every second of the school day, you know, I think that it should be like a, almost like they should give them a syllabus and allow the parents to check in with the teacher, and if they have any questions, they can set appointments with the teacher and do a Zoom call one-on-one, if that's necessary, a 5-on-5 or something, but make it smaller and less screen time.
Raymond, thank you so much for calling and for your suggestions. We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment. I'm speaking with Jose Vilson, education activist, former teacher in the New York City school systems. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Allison Stewart, and I'm speaking with education activist Jose Luis Vilson, and we're taking your calls about what you're struggling with during this first full week of school. It's a little catharsis on the radio. Give us a call and tell us what are the issues that you're facing and even how you're dealing with them. That's 646-435-7280. Jose, you know, I was thinking during that break about our last caller, Raymond from the Bronx, just talking about this sense that so much more could have happened over the summer when it comes to ramping up, whether it's the broadband and the Wi-Fi, giving people the tools they needed and getting people on board with those tools before this new school year started. You know, I'm sure you know what that experience is like from a teaching perspective, from your experience last spring, but I want to shift a little bit because you are also experiencing this as a parent. And so I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit from that perspective about what this experience has been like.
Well, what's interesting about this pandemic is not just that we have this pandemic in isolation, but that we've also had any number of crises happen at the same time, whether we look at our immigration crises, a racial uprising that happened across multiple generations and families and cities. And so any number of things are happening. And so what I have found really interesting is, you know, when I look at my own son's education, I was able to actually sit down with him and have the conversations about what's happening in the news. And then when I actually had to have the conversation with his own teacher about what was going on, we actually had multiple conversations, not just from parent to teacher, but also colleague to colleague. So in that sense, I was able to then say, okay, how are you going to step into this moment and have the conversations with 8-year-olds who, mind you, like, were totally on top of what was happening in the news, totally had, you know, eloquent things to say about what was going on in their own communities. And mind you, I'm in Harlem, so it's mostly Black and Brown children who wanted to have the conversation about what was going on. So in any ways that I was able to actually help the pedagogy for my child and his classmates, I was very grateful to have that opportunity, right? It didn't always go as hot because, you know, obviously when you have Google Classroom, and I'm just going to call it out for what it is, you get all these different assignments thrown at you and you have all these technological issues and errors and trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, all the while, people are trying to replicate school in a virtual setting, which doesn't work. Instead, what I found this year, which has been better than last year, is that students are being given more time to complete assignments, which that's a good thing. We want to make sure that students are able to complete assignments to fidelity without having to worry about like teachers just throwing assignments at them because they feel like that's the only way they're going to be able to meet the rigor and expectations for what a face-to-face interaction should have looked like. So that's kind of what it's been like for me, figuring out what it is that I can make sure my child learns and does in the classroom and make that connected to what's going on in the current moment.
Mm. I want to bring in another caller, Leora in Brooklyn. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much.
So tell us what your experience has been like so far.
So I'm a teacher assistant at a school for kids with autism. So we just opened this week in person. And it's been kind of insane. Things are changing constantly. Every day we're getting different updates. We're getting different protocols and different safety issues and trying to explain to 8 and 9 year olds why they can't go to the gym. They can't go to the art room. Why we have to stay in the classroom all day is just very difficult, and trying to get them to understand and trying to support them, but also keep 6 feet away. It's kind of impossible sometimes.
Have you found any techniques more helpful than others, ways that you're trying to, trying to work around some of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, we try our best to help them from afar, but still in the classroom. So, for example, we have like a corner that's like the chill out corner. So if they're having a hard time, they can go there because a lot of them have a lot of emotional trouble, and usually we take them to a separate room when they're having trouble. But like, for example, now we have a separate corner, or we'll try to pull them aside in some way. But yeah, we use the breakout rooms during Zoom a lot. And other than that, it's kind of just trying your best.
Leora, thank you so much. And thank you for the work that you do. Let's take another caller, Zach in East Brunswick, New Jersey. Zach, thanks for calling WNYC. How is your school year going?
So it's been off to a little bit of a rocky start. We're one of the only districts open in the county. And so because of that, tensions are kind of high. But past that, it's been a little tough getting students of different backgrounds just in the classroom, whether it's logged on or up and ready in person. It's been kind of tough getting everyone on the same page.
Hmm. And Zach, you are a teacher as well, is that right?
That's right. I am a middle school chorus and music teacher. So I have the added benefit that, kids kind of, that may not feel super successful in other kind of situations do feel successful in music, and I'm very happy and pleased to be able to provide that for kids. But also the added difficulty of doing music from afar is very real, especially with, expectations of, you need to record yourself singing this or doing that. So,
Well, Zach, thank you for calling us and sharing another kind of slice of what this world is looking like in this new school year. Jose, I'm wondering if you have any reaction. Those were two teachers who we just heard from and some very different experiences with how to manage their classrooms in this new setting. I'm wondering what your reaction is to that.
I think, number one, it reminds me how we have to reconsider what it means to actually test for proficiency. We've noticed that there's been a move away from standardized testing and more towards trying to use elements of the assessments that teachers use to the music teacher's point, right? Considering how, students are able to perform is a really big deal. And in the ways that we can make sure that students are able to, demonstrate their knowledge and their learning, we're going to have to do more of that during this pandemic, because it's not like we can actually give real standardized testing and make it, to fidelity. I think secondly, though, I am always impressed by teachers who are able to, take what they're given and then reform that into ways that allow their students to have access. even during these times. Like there's nothing, you know, that's the innovation that people have always sought, especially education reformers. And yet, you know, during a pandemic, here we are trying to actually be innovative about the ways that we do things, given what we've been given. I'm also a big fan, by the way, of us delaying school even further until every single school building is able to fully say every child has what they need in order to succeed during this pandemic. I think, you know, we rushed way too much into things. And unfortunately, that hasn't allowed all the access necessary to make sure every child is able to succeed, right? So instead of trying to make sure, because nobody ever said that we actually had to start in September. Like, that is not anywhere in the Constitution. It's just a thing that we wanted to do to pretend like it was normal. And it's like, no, like, this is not normal times. So it's
not
okay
at
for us
all
to say, hey, like, right. And you know, it's interesting. Like, I live,
I'm going to have to jump in. I'm sorry to step on you, Jose. We have to wrap things up. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with education activist Jose Luis Vilson. Thank you for joining us on All of It. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Allison Stewart.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at zbiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's zbiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.